Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 9 of Season 12 of Mover, a Minute to Daily podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Nick Rehak of the Rabbit Hole Podcasting Network. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you for having me back.
Always a pleasure. Always enjoy having you around.
Thank you.
So Minute 9 begins with Red continuing to go up the stairs and ends with a bus advancing towards the front gate. So we left things off yesterday with Red getting rejected and deciding to, and basically leaving the office that he was in, or I don't even know what else you would want to call it. And, going outside to get a little bit of vitamin D and fresh air. And he's walking up a staircase to get back into the quad. Sees a bunch of other cons around. Then what's great is you see a whole bunch of guys, they're basically sitting on bleachers. So what do you know about bleachers?
I know that they're, at least my experience with them has always been at sporting games for high schools and colleges and that kind of thing. Some are collapsible, some are cemented and set in the ground, but they're mainly just places for people to sit.
Do you know why they're called bleachers?
Ooh. That I do not.
Okay. So the term bleachers originated in late 19th century America to describe the uncovered tiered wooden benches at outdoor sports fields, baseball parks and stuff like that. And because these seats didn't have a roof over them, the intense sun constantly beat down on the wood, causing the paint to fade and the boards to literally become bleached. And that's why they call them bleachers.
Interesting.
Around 1889 was the first recorded text in America using the term bleachers, and it was derived from the verb bleach, you know, something that I guess whitens or whatever. You have the idea of the bleacher bums, and it was always known that the bleacher seats in baseball parks, were the nosebleed seats and stuff like that. But it was still for diehard vocal fans who sat in these unshaded sections, and they became known as bleacher bums because they were always shouting, at the players and at the everything going on. So I just think that's really, really cool, the idea.
Have you ever heard of the phrase bleacher creature?
I have. I don't know where, though.
Yeah, it's similar to bleacher bum, but it's just a goofier way of saying like someone that's just like rowdy and at the game and just a fanatic.
Are you a bleacher creature?
Not at all. I prefer to sit in an area that's shaded. I'm good on the heavy sweat. I don't mind a little bit of sweat, a little bit of perspiration, but I'm good on the sun beating down directly on me.
Yeah, I prefer the air conditioned movie theater.
Yeah. There you go.
That's where I'll stay. I don't need to be outdoors. I'm not a sports fan. If I watch something, I'm watching baseball on TV. That's it. I remember the last time I've been to a game even. It's been that long. But
oh wow.
I mean, one of the things also about bleachers is that they're always tiered from a perspective that everyone can actually still see. Which is a great way that they put them together, stuff like that. They actually would call the fans that would sit in the bleachers, they were also known as bleachers, which is really interesting,
Yeah, because one would think like bleacher something or something bleacher, not just like a bleacher. It's like if someone called you a theater chair doesn't really hit the same, but like if you were at a bar sitting all the time, it's like if somebody called you a stool.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's interesting. So it lists here also, like you said, the bleacher creatures, bleacher bums, bleacherites, and Bleacher fans. But
I think Bleacher writes funny.
Yeah, I think so too. There are also like you have minor league games that minor league fields that only have bleachers. You know, so it's not even you can't just call them the Bleacher Bums. It's everyone who's coming.
Yeah, everybody's a bum.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, he moves around and Floyd is the first one to talk to him. He goes, "Hey, Red, how'd it go?" And he looks at him and goes, "Same old, different day." Now, I wonder where that phrase originated, because I mean, you hear it all the time, SSDD, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But it sounds strange coming out of Red's mouth. I don't know why. You know, it feels as if it's too forced.
Yeah, in that, because we see that character, like, you know, yesterday, like we talked about, just like kind of timid, unsure, a little, just like not him. And then, yeah, just to be like all of a sudden sounding kind of like a tough guy.
Right.
Or someone that's not just, and maybe he's just saying it like hurriedly to like shake it off and move on to the next conversation. Like saying it that way, I feel like is much easier than going, "I don't want to talk about it." Because if you say that, most of the time people are going to press a little bit more and want to talk about it. Because I think at heart, most people are decent enough people to be like, "What's ailing you? What can I do to help you?" kind of thing. And some people, you know, don't want to go through that. Some people just want to go, you know what? I'm good. Don't worry about me. Let's keep going.
Right. Okay. That's fair. So the term same different day, which is abbreviated SSDD, originated in the mid 20th century. And the idea is that, you know, military and working class people would just use it basically saying that, you know, the cynical retort of acknowledging that the daily grind or challenges, it doesn't matter what day it is, you're doing the same thing. The only thing that's changed is the actual day. Now, the abbreviation SSDD became famous by a Stephen King novel that you actually mentioned the other day.
Ooh.
You have any idea I'll even tell you what day. You mentioned it yesterday.
Dreamcatcher.
That's right.
Ooh.
In the 2001 novel Dreamcatcher, the characters frequently use it as a coping mechanism for the repetitive absurdity of their situation. And there are a whole bunch of variations to the phrase also. You have same shit, different pile, different clown, same circus.
I like that.
And there is a Latin-inspired twist, same shit, different DM.
I like that. I've taken to saying same old same, but on a, and then whatever the day of the week is. So like, you know, same old, but on a Thursday.
There. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Okay, makes sense.
Just so it's not as like, I'm not saying that SSDD is like such a, I mean, it is cynical to an extent, but at least same old same just seems like middle of the road. Nothing, it's not great. It's not awful. It's fine.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. And then Red continues his conversation with the guys around him. And Skeet then says to him, "Yeah, and now you feel. I'm up for rejection next week." And then Snooze. I love the names of these guys. Snooze then interjects and goes, "Yeah, I got rejected last week." He goes, "It happens." And then another con shows up. It's Ernie. And what's great is if you know that he's about to show up, you can actually see him approach from the other side of the quad. And Ernie shows up and he goes, "Hey, Red, bump me a dick." And Red looks at him and goes, "Get the fuck out of my face, will you, man? You're into me for 5 packs already." And Ernie goes, "4. Ernie goes, 5. So, you know, they make us see that you know, Red is a hard-ass businessman before we even know what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I love the way the camera follows them. And the camera, like, jiggles a little bit along the way. You know, it's not a clear shot. And I always find this funny, and I'll probably mention it next week and in the future. You know, it doesn't seem like Ernie's one of their gang, but after this scene, Ernie's always with them. So is he their mascot? Like, what's the reason that they're letting Ernie around?
Could just be a hanger on, and honestly, I mean, what else are they gonna do? They're gonna have to be with this person for an undetermined amount of time, so might as well make the best of it. And just, he ain't too much of a bother at the moment, so why not? And I do like the shots in that a scene like this where he's setting up and talking about, who he is and what he can do, and everybody and his little group that's like kind of following him. In any other movie, Morgan Freeman's character would be in a nice suit. He'd be handing out money left and right. It's very similar in a sense to like the walk and talk from Goodfellas
That's right.
about when he's going into the kitchen and coming up through the restaurant. And it has that same energy, but it's just very different because he's stuck in a prison with these like sad brick walls and all these people that are just walking through that. And they're not like walking through in a disrespectful way. It's just that's just the direction he's walking. But he's also not so afeared to where people are like avoiding, the way he like his direction or something. And I do like the idea of this obscured shot, how they're just like constantly moving and grooving. Like he's just a regular guy, but he's able to do this extra thing.
But I also like the fact that he has his entourage around. It tells us that Red is a influential and powerful man. And then as he's walking with all these guys, he begins his narration. And what's really interesting, I don't know if you noticed it, is you can see that he then reaches into his pocket and actually passes Ernie a pack.
You know what? That never dawned on me until you said it just now. He just does. And even though he knows how Ernie's gonna be as a character, like maybe it's one of those the devil type things, or just like I don't feel like getting bugged because I got something else on my mind, so just here you go, like leave me
No,
alone, leave
I
me
see.
be.
I think it's in a different from a different perspective. I think that he likes Ernie, and the reason that he argues with Ernie out loud is for everyone else to see that he's, that he's a hard ass. But he wants to still help out Ernie, which is why when they're walking, he just, they're just casually walking, he reaches into his pocket, pulls out a pack, and passes it over to Ernie, who takes it right away and puts it into his jacket also. So I love the way they do that. And then we hear his narration. And he goes, "There must be a con like me in every prison in America. I'm the guy who can get it for you. Cigarettes, bag of reefer, that's your thing. Bottle of brandy to celebrate your kid's high school graduation. Damn near anything within reason. Yes, sir. I'm a regular Sears and Roebuck." And then we get a the siren of the of the prison to begin to wail. Now, so what was funny for you? The fact that he mentioned the reefer?
Just the way he reefer. Reefer has always been so funny and goofy to me. And it makes me giggle.
Okay. What movie is it? There's someone that they say, "Are you a bunch of reefer addicts?"
Oh, Reefer Madness?
No. It's an older movie where somebody, says, "Oh, you guys are just reefer addicts."
Back to the Future.
There you go.
When
That's
they're in the alleyway during the school dance, he's a bunch of reefer addicts.
right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. I knew it was something Okay, we mentioned Sears and Roebuck's. Do you know the origin of Sears and Roebuck and Company?
Well, Sears and Roebuck was initially just a catalog, and this is going back into like to 1800s, maybe 1700s, but I'm probably wrong. It's a catalog, and essentially you just ordered stuff that you wanted, and they would deliver it to you, assumedly on like a Wells Fargo wagon or something like that. I don't know what happened when they there's like an eventual split, or they just dropped the Roebuck or something. But I know Sears became a huge department store, and my grandmother actually worked for Sears for years and years and years and years and years. So I'm very familiar with Sears.
Wait, the grandma that you would run to go hear, eat the cookies with, or the grandma that watched the Die Hard movies with you?
Grandma Die Hard.
Okay, that's good. You see,
Yeah.
I remember these stories.
I know you do. Yep, old grandma die hard. During the day, she's just, looking at books and doing finance stuff, and then at night it's Die Hard and Vin Diesel and Rodgers and Hammerstein and
Hey, why not? If she can do it, then that's great. And
Absolutely.
she reared her grandson properly.
I'd like to think so.
I based on the stories you've told me, it sounds like it. So the truth is the origin story of the whole idea of Sears and Roebuck is something that happened by an accident. There was a 22-year-old railway station agent named Richard Warren Sears in Minnesota. He ended up getting a shipment of pocket watches. There was a local jeweler who refused to accept the watches, so he met the guy and made a deal with the jeweler that he would sell them with the person who shipped them, that he would sell them himself. And what he did was he went and was selling watches to other station agents along the line, and made a little bit of a profit on the whole thing. Now, within 6 months, he had made enough money to be able to quit working there, and he opened up his own company called the R.W. Sears Watch Company in Minneapolis. A few years later, he relocated to Chicago, placed an advertisement for a watchmaker, and he hired a man named Alva Curtis Roebuck, who would repair the watches. And also help handle the mail order jewelry business that they had. Then they
Okay.
then 5 years later they expanded the things that they were selling beyond watches, incorporated the historic name of Sears Roebuck and Company. So yeah, just a really really interesting way that the whole thing. And basically, as you said, they dealt with mostly sending catalogs for mail order stuff. And they didn't build a building for these type of things because in 1896 there was an act of Congress called the Rural Free Delivery Act, which allowed them to ship tools, apparel, and furniture to rural farmers at transparent prices, which was great for them. They were able to make a lot of money by the whole thing.
Huh, I didn't know that part.
By the mid 20th century, it was 1% of the entire U.S. economy.
What?
They did a very nice job there.
I wonder if in relation, like if we did that by nowadays, what does that look like from a Walmart or an Amazon perspective? Like, is Walmart 1% or 5% or whatever percent? I would imagine pretty large percent Walmart, vast company, same with Amazon. But I'd be curious as to, is Amazon by then standards or even today's standards, are they like toe and toe, or is Amazon far surpassed Sears and Roebuck?
Right.
I'd be
Yeah.
curious.
All right. Well, I'll let you look that up if you want.
I will. Some other day, not today,
That's
but
right. So
some other day.
in 2011, they had the most stores open in their entire history. They had 2,705 stores.
Wow.
Okay. As of June 2026, how many stores do you think are still open?
Probably 200. I know the one near us recently closed up.
You are off by 195. There are five stores that are still open in the US.
What? Oh my goodness. That is insane. It got to be all Midwest, assumedly.
Yeah. I don't know where those five stores are.
That's crazy.
Don't think.
Wow. You imagine just 2,000 some and then five.
Up until 1989, it was the largest retailer in the US, and then Walmart surpassed them in 89.
Well, if Walmart's passed them in 89, then they're definitely more than 1% of the U.S. economy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't think Walmart was that big then. I thought that was more of like a 90s thing
Did I.
Walmart came around, but obviously
We'll
not.
have to wait for a movie where someone goes into Walmart, and then we can talk about it.
Yeah.
There's a limit to where we can go off script here. So yeah, he So the sirens go off, and I love how all of the characters then look up, knowing that something big is going on, now that there's a siren. And again, the cinematography here is amazing, because we see some of the shots from Red's perspective, some of them from the sky's perspective of everything in the compound and stuff like that. It's great. I really
Yeah.
Once again, as I said earlier this week, I can't believe he didn't win an Oscar, or Deakin didn't win an Oscar for cinematography here. It just baffles me. Baffles, baffles, baffles. And then we get a shot of a bus turning into a small road, I guess you could say. And the narration continues, and Red says, "So when Andy Dufresne came to me in 1949 and asked me to smuggle Rita Hayworth into the prison for him," and then he gets cut off. Yeah, this is basically, do you have any idea what the origin of the name Dufresne is? They somehow make it seem here as if it's like a very common name, but I don't know.
It kind of rolls off the tongue, and it's nice and pleasant to say Dufresne. It makes me, I would think French, maybe some type of French or something.
Yes, it is French, and it means from the ash tree. So it's the name of like people who used to live near a prominent ash tree or an ash grove, and someone originating from a small village that was named Lefrain, I guess. Du means from the, and then Frain is an ash tree.
Huh, well, that makes sense then.
Yeah. Again, it's just really, really, it's strange that he would use the name, and I mean, it popularized the name. Most people now know what I've heard. Like if in the 80s or early 90s, someone would have said to me, "Have you ever heard the name Dufresne?" I'm like, "No." But now everyone says it. Of course, I know Andy Dufresne.
Yeah. And then people would try to do like a quasi, Morgan Freeman impression, Andy Dufresne, and something like that.
That's right. The bus starts coming in closer to Shawshank. It turns onto the street. That's where this minute ends. So, did you have anything else you wanted to add about this this minute?
I like how that's Morgan Freeman's introduction of Andy Dufresne. It's not like he sees them on the yard and says, "I'm Red and I do this and that," or "I'm the." He just, in a casual conversation, as if he was talking to me to you, he's like, "Now this guy, I met him because he asked for this." There's just something really cool about that. I just really, really like that introduction.
Okay. I agree with you. It definitely makes it very unique the way that they do that. And I think that's the point.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. So today's segment, which is a great segue to our discussion of Andy, is called Andy Do Thursday. So why don't you give us your top five Tim Robbins performances?
Starting with, well, I will say up front, yesterday I talked about how, for Morgan Freeman, I excluded Shawshank. Well, for Tim Robbins, I included Shawshank because I realized I've only seen five movies with Tim Robbins in it. Or at least films that I recognize that has Tim Robbins in it. So this is literally five movies.
Okay. That works.
So we got it just under the wire here. So number five is going to be Antitrust. Number four is going to be IQ. Number three is going to be Jacob's Ladder. Number two is going to be Shawshank. And number one is going to be Mystic River.
That is a great list. And you've, again, it is only the second week, but you've chosen movies, some of the movies on this list that nobody else has. That works well, too.
I'm going to be very surprised if I hear Antitrust from anyone else.
I had actually even forgotten about Antitrust until you just mentioned it right now.
A lot of people have.
I've seen it, and I did like it. Because he's,
it's not bad.
He's a Bill Gates type of guy. That's his,
yeah.
That's what he's doing there. So So yeah, I do like that. Now we will play the first of two daily games, and we will play the game of Hilo. So let's spin the wheel and see what you're gonna get. Okay, the 1971 film The French Connection.
Okay. So IMDb definitely going to be high on this. Or will it? I don't want to set myself up for failure. For IMDb, let's say this is a solid, I don't like using whole numbers, but I feel like this is a solid 8. And then on Rotten Tomatoes, this has got to be a 98%.
No, it's a 7.7, and it's 90,
Really?
96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I thought people
Well,
loved this
apparently
movie.
on Rotten Tomatoes they do. Right, let's spin the wheel for your next one. Okay, the 2009 film District 9.
I'm gonna play it safe and we'll do 7.6 on IMDb. And I think for Rotten Tomatoes, because this was, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was a South African director, and I feel like this was like his big, like, here I am
Wasn't it
kind of
Nick
film. But was it?
Blah something?
Yeah,
Blomkamp. There you
Blomkamp.
go.
Blomkamp. And I'm just trying to think of how loved was it. Is it high 90s or is it high 80s? I'm going to go for the middle and I'm going to say 92%.
Oh, it's 90, 90. When you
Ugh.
said the middle, I was like, all right, you're gonna get it. You're gonna go right, and they say 90.
Nope.
And IMDb is 7.9.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
All right, let's spin the wheel for your third and final one today. The 1988 film Dangerous Liaisons, not starring Andy Dufresne's
Okay.
wife.
Dangerous Liaisons. Let's say a 7.1 on IMDb. And I feel like this might be a bit of a curveball, so let's go with like a 78% on Rotten Tomatoes.
No, it's 7.6 and 93.
Oh.
I'm very shocked that that's so high.
That's I was if you would have said 80 something, I could be like, oh, okay. But that is, but you know what though? Good for Dangerous Liaisons, you know?
That's true. Again, I like the movie, but I don't know if I would go that high. That's the thing. No, probably not. All right, and now we will play the other daily game of Name That Novel Adaptation. Let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Okay, this is a movie from 1990, and the original book is called Wise Guy.
All right, so here's where it's got to be, well, so I'm torn between two. I'm torn between Goodfellas and I'm torn between Casino. Because I feel like it's got to be one of the other.
Do you want me to tell you if it's one or
And
the other or not?
no,
Okay.
no. Because I'm just gonna go with Goodfellas.
And that would be the correct choice because Goodfellas came out in 1990 and Casino came out in 95. So
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. For some reason, I've always thought that Goodfellas was 90 and Casino was 92. I don't know why it's in my head that Casino came out in
No,
92.
he was he Joe Pesci was too busy doing My Cousin Vinny in 92,
Ah.
so.
I wonder if the same guy also wrote the Casino one, and that's what has me tripped up between the two.
Was it Nicholas Pileggi? Something like that.
That sounds about right. That sounds like
It's
him.
what's your name's husband? He was married to Nora Ephron. That's who it was. That's right. I forgot.
Okay. That's a combination.
And he did write Casino, and he also wrote City Hall with Pacino.
Okay.
I
Okay.
actually forgot that he had written also Casino.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah. Pileggi knew how to knows how to write scripts because he's still alive as of today, as of recording, and hopefully he will remain that way. He was born in 1933, which means that
It's coming up on a
he's
centurion here. Or centurion?
centenarian, I think. Yeah, we'll
There
have
we go.
to talk to Willard Scott about that.
Yeah. Get some
There you
Smuckers.
right. Nick, would you like once again to tell people where they can find Nick Rehack?
Absolutely. Well, outside of Rabbit Hole Podcasts, I do show up on other programs as well, one of which is the Exploding Helicopter Podcast hosted by Will Slater. I promise he's not paying me to tell people that I'm on his show. I love being on his show and I love talking about it. And recently, we've talked about Wedlock, we've talked about Half Past Dead, and we've talked about Half Past Dead 2. So if you haven't seen those films yet, I don't blame you. You don't really need to see them, but do enjoy the conversation over at the Exploding Helicopter Podcast.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, Nick, you feel like coming back in tomorrow to finish off the week?
I absolutely do.
So, get busy living.
Or get busy dying.